Welcome to Get to Work Hurley, your podcast for pro writers, fans, and geeks of all sorts. On this episode, he's the co-creator of the Pathfinder and Starfinder role-playing games, the author of fantasy novels Death's Heretic, a finalist for the Compton Crook Award for Best First Novel, and The Redemption Engine, which won the 2015 Scribe Award for Best Original Speculative Novel. His young adult romance novels Dark Hearts and The Ghost of Us are out this June. When not writing, James has performed with musical acts ranging from metalcore to musical theater. Please welcome to the show, James L. Sutter. And now your host, Cameron Hurley.
James, thank you for joining us. I think as we chatted a little bit before, I haven't seen you in years and years, but it's
yeah. Been well, thanks for having me. Like I'm a big fan of the podcast.
Oh, that's awesome.
Which is why I should have known to not to talk over Tim during the introduction.
Either way. I know it's weird. Like Tim, the announcer for Get to Work Hurley. It's like, I hope you have that on all of your business cards, Tim.
Because I'm yes, sure I do.
Really good. Because it's really so James, welcome to the show. I know Thanks. That for folks that again are not really familiar with you, like you have been running the gamut of careers careers adjacent. I know you were again in gaming for a while, and you've kind of transitioned to being, again, as you had told me earlier, into being full-time novelist. So tell us a little bit about your career trajectory and what really kind of led you to jump off and be full-time and make the switch.
Yeah. So, I mean, it has kind of been all over the place. So I started working in the tabletop role-playing game industry when I was 20. I got straight out of college and ended up getting an internship at Dungeon and Dragon magazines, which had been going since the 70s. And I worked my way up there working on Dungeons and Dragons. And then we sort of spun off and created this game called Pathfinder that got very popular, kept doing that. And then eventually we created a game called Starfinder as well, which was sort of the science fantasy version. And I was the creative director in charge of launching that. I also ran the tie-in novel line, which we did both by ourselves and eventually in partnership with Tor. So I was the executive editor there. So I kind of did, every sort of writing and game design you can think of in the tabletop industry for about 13 years. And at some point, I'd done Pathfinder, I did Starfinder, and it came out and was a huge hit. And then pretty shortly thereafter, I said, I think I'm done. I think I've done everything that I want to do, because, here I am. I'm the creative director of a game that's like based in large part on sort of the work that I'd done during my time at Pathfinder. So it really felt like my baby, not just like I was in charge, but like I felt this great sense of ownership, and it was going really well. And I just thought, I don't want to stay so long that I burn out. I want to pull a Calvin and Hobbes and just ride off into the sunset, like while everybody still thinks highly of me. I'd been writing, novels as well, in addition to running the novel line. I had put out the two Pathfinder tie-in novels. Writing fiction had always been my first love. I was still publishing short stories, and I was also doing comics and video games and all this different stuff. But the biggest reason I decided to jump ship was just, even though I was the creative director and the executive editor, I was still working for a company and I still didn't own any of the work that I produced. I put so much of myself into the work that I was doing, but I didn't own the worlds, I didn't own the characters. And after a while, I just thought, I want to own my work. I want to sink or swim based sort of entirely on my own stuff. And so I went ahead and left my position at Paizo and started writing full time. And at that time, I still was focused primarily on science fiction and fantasy. And I was still doing, freelance for both Paizo and official Dungeons and Dragons and doing a lot of different stuff, doing some video game work. But fiction was really what I was focused on. And then during the pandemic, things got weird because I was writing this big dystopian space opera, and it was just so depressing. I was just, living in a dystopia. I didn't want to write about it. And I was reading all this young adult romance, especially queer young adult romance. And I just wanted to see if I could do it. And so I didn't even tell my agent until the book was basically done. I started writing this book, Dark Hearts, which is basically, could you fall in love with the boy who stole your chance to be a rock star? And so it's a, you know, queer awakening, teen, young adult romance that drew a lot on my own experiences, both as a bisexual dude and as a teenage musician who didn't quite hit it big, you know? And so that really wrestling with that feeling of what do you do when the plan you had for your life doesn't work out and you feel like you're 18 and you've already missed your shot. You're already a has-been. I don't know about y'all, but that was my experience when I was, had been, you know, a precocious, you know, teenager where everybody was like, oh, you're so good for 16. And then eventually you start hitting 18, 19, and you see all the bands younger than you getting really good. And you go, oh no, like I'm washed up. So I wrote this book and showed it to my agent at the time and was like, I know this isn't what you represent, but here you go. And she was like, yeah, I don't represent this. Like, I'm sure it's very good for what it is, but it's not my jam. So then I had to go find another agent. And that was my third agent search and by far the hardest one I'd ever had because I was trying to keep my my original agent for you know, my adult stuff, but find somebody who would cover just the young adult. And nobody really tells you that agents kind of demand monogamy. You know, like they have many clients, but they want to just have the one, or they want you to just have the one. And so I got so many more rejections than with my first two agents, just because most people wouldn't even look at it. And then through an amazing series of coincidences, I actually ended up with my absolute top choice agent. And then it was one of those things where I looked for 7 months. He read the book in a week, got back to me, said, let's do it. And like 2 weeks later, sold the book. And so suddenly I was a young adult author.
He knew who to connect you with. Yeah, he knew when he read it that I know where this goes. Yeah.
Well, and the experience was so different. And like one of the things that I love about Josh Adams, my agent, is he does have a lot of heavy hitters in his stable. So, you know, when he sent it out, he said, all right, I'm going to give everybody 2 weeks to read it. And I went, you can do that? Because, you know, my previous experience had been like 6 months to hear back from people. And he said, well, I can do that. And I went, okay, great. And he did. And it was awesome. And I ended up in a 2-book deal with Wednesday, which is part of St. Martin's. And so that's how Dark Hearts came out last year. And then in June, my book, The Ghost of Us, which is a sapphic young adult romance, but is more supernatural. It's basically ghost meets 10 Things I Hate About You, because it's about a teenage ghost hunter.
You know, it's so funny. It sounds like you actually kind of had two, like you had like almost a quarter life crisis and then like a midlife crisis.
Yeah,
right.
Just so keep hitting.
Like a music crisis. Yeah, we're like, oh my gosh. And I actually know that because I was a theater kid and it was,
yeah.
Right. Where there's that moment where you're like, I'm really good at this, but to get really, really good at this, I would have needed to, you know, look a little different, start a little earlier, and I'm going to have to work harder than a lot of people. And is this really something that I want to pursue, or do I want, you know, to go into this? So that's very interesting. Also that again, and then you went into, you know, oh, okay, I kind of reached the pinnacle.
Yeah.
All this thing in games where it's like, I am at the top. I've created my own thing. I am kind of running it, but to your point, you're still not in charge of it. Right. Like it's at the ultimate,
yeah.
It's owned by a corporation. So then it's like, okay, now what am I going to do? And it's funny that again, you went to the thing where, oh, this is what brings me joy, right? Right.
Yeah.
This is what brings me joy. And so this is what, you know, I'm going to pursue. So that is very interesting. And I wonder how do you know, and this is something I struggle with as well, is like, we as people change, right?
Yeah.
Our creative work is going to change. But when do you know it's time to make that shift and to, you know, do the plunge? Like,
it's so hard. It's so hard. I think for me, a lot of it is when I'm no longer interested in kind of climbing whatever ladder I'm on, or when I can't see the joy in the next rung. Right. And it's so scary, especially, you know, quitting music, I mean, not quitting, I still play music, but, you know, quitting my days of bands where we were really trying to make it was very much, it wasn't a choice, really. It was just bands break up. But there was an element of, you know, we had reached that point where, like, I'd headlined this club called The Showbox in Seattle. And I remember being 16 and being like, my dream is to someday headline The Showbox. And then, like, at some point we did. And then after that, when you don't have that sort of shiny goal that you're reaching for, you realize, like, oh, well, to get to the next stage, you just have to grind at this stage for potentially forever, right? Like, you're just going to be doing the same thing over and over. Do you actually want that now that you're here? Or did you just want to get there once? And in that case, also, there was a little bit of looking around and being like, do we actually get along, like, as a band? Like, does anybody like the lead singer? Like, you know, like that kind of thing, which is unfair, but, like, we had some problems. It was much harder, actually, with leaving the gaming industry, because when Starfinder came out, being the creative director on that, I felt like a rock star, you know, getting to go, you know, do interviews in, like, you know, Wired or Game Informer. And then you go to Gen Con, which is the big tabletop gaming convention. And, you know, we'd walk down this line of, like, hundreds of people in line to buy the new book, just signing autographs like you're Bono or something. And that's a rush. But at some point, I had to say, okay, do I want to keep, like, every new thing that I do here? It's like diminishing returns, right? Like, I've written so many game books at this point. Do I really feel that much pride and joy in having another one on my resume? And at some point it was like, well, kind of, but what I really wanted to always be was a novelist. So even knowing that I might very well never again achieve, like, the sort of status that I had achieved in one industry, I knew I needed to jump and just give it a shot. And I was very fortunate that I could. It was actually, you know, there is, of course, a lot of privilege in being able to be like, I'm going to quit my job and go become, you know, an independent author. And that was sort of weird because it was a lot of privilege. And also, you know, my wife worked tech at the time and she was like, well, go ahead and, you know, yeah, we're fine. We got plenty of money. Like, follow your dream. I'll support us. And then I quit. And for like a month, it was idyllic. And then a month after that, my wife got very sick and ended up in bed and has been there for the last 6 years. So I went from, you know, being the sort of stay at home, a little bit kept husband, like, artiste, to being like, oh, I'm the breadwinner and the caregiver as an independent author. Oh God. Okay. Let's see how this works. But I mean, we've made it work and it's fine, but it was definitely not the leisurely vacation I sort of imagined.
See, and it is so fun. And you have still managed to make it work, you know?
Yeah.
Time. I do. Cause I know quite a few writers and no one ever talks about it really till they come on my show. But who quit the day job and then we'll go back. Right.
Like, oh, yeah.
You have to go back because you can't make it work, you know?
Well, and you miss it. You
made it work. Yeah. Yeah.
And like, I don't know about you, but I miss, well, I mean, I know you still have day job elements, but like, I miss the camaraderie of working on a team. I miss being in an office. I miss, and people don't really talk about this, but like, when you're salaried and you're in a dumb meeting, you're being paid to sit there, listen to other people. And then when you're on your own, you're only paid if you're producing, right? And so like, yeah, you're in charge of your own schedule, but I never get paid to just like sit around or eat lunch or, you know, you know, check my email or whatever on company time. There's none of that anymore.
It reminds me of actually Hollywood calls, like when Hollywood people want to talk to me. They're on LA time. And so it's always late here, like at 8 p.m. And I'm just like, why are we're just sitting around here fucking talking. Can someone write me a check? Because I'm not getting paid right now. I'm not getting paid for this meeting. And it is like people really want to talk. And it does, like it totally changes how you think about time, right? When it's something that you're just going around and around on. And it's very different. Well, but you just go, well, the client's paying for this versus I am the person and I'm getting my own time out of this.
Yeah. Well, and that's why, you know, like for anybody who's listening, who's a freelancer, because I still do, you know, and have done lots of work for video games, comics, you know, even still role-playing game stuff. It's important as a freelancer to, as much as you can, build in the cushion and expense for when they do want to call you and chat about sort of their blue sky ideas. You know, those planning sessions, often when you're working for a big client, they're all getting paid. They're at their job, but they don't necessarily realize that you are sitting there working for free. So you have to build that money into your quote yourself.
Yeah, no, and that is, and that's a very good tip. I'm also, again, curious with as far as like that, because you said it was your third agent, actually.
Yeah.
Does it, and this is something I talk to people a lot, again, is how do you, same thing with career, how do you know when it's time to change agents, and how do you kind of build yourself up to have that conversation? I think a lot of people think, oh, well, they're afraid to change agents. They're afraid they'll get blackballed as like being difficult. Whereas again, as in your case, like I'm on my second agent. I know people who have had five agents, sometimes
right.
No fault of their own. It's just their agent stopped agenting. So again, very similarly, like how do you know when it's time, and how do you have those conversations?
Man,
like how did you fire your last agent, right? Because again, and it wasn't really firing, right?
It was
just
well,
like
it was
moved creatively in different directions.
Yeah, it was sort of a number of things. So my first time out, I was looking for an agent, and I actually was looking for a young adult agent the first time, because I had written a young adult speculative novel, and I sort of, you know, went out, and I had a little bit of an advantage in that I did have all of these sort of credits in adjacent industries. I had written several novels, so I wasn't coming out of nowhere, but I, you know, I found an agent that I quite liked, who did like young adult fantasy stuff. And she took the book out. It did not sell. In retrospect, it certainly did not deserve to sell, and I'm really glad that it didn't. But then when I came back for my second book with her, I turned it in, and she was like, ooh, this doesn't feel young adult to me. Like, this feels like an adult science fiction thriller, and I don't know how to fix it. And I was kind of like, okay. And she was like, actually, all your other ideas also feel like adult science fiction. Why don't you just find an adult agent? And so she kind of broke up with me. Like, she didn't like push it, you know, she didn't dump me, but she was like, I don't feel like I'm the right fit for you anymore. And to be honest, our communication had not been great, maybe because she was avoiding having that conversation. So I was like, okay, I think that's fine. So I went and sort of did the same thing. By that point, you know, I'd been in the industry long enough that I had lots of friends that I could ask around and be like, how do you like your agent? How do you like your agent? And that's kind of how I made the list. But I still did what every new author does and created the giant spreadsheet of, you know, 150 agents, and you research them all and see like, who are their clients? Like, do people seem happy? Is there any weird controversy that I need to, you know, Google and learn about? And so then I ended up with my second agent, who represented a friend of mine, who was an adult science fiction fantasy agent, who I really liked and continue to like as a person. Like, we get along well. And she took that same book out, but now aged up a little bit to be an adult science fiction thriller. And that was really a heartbreaker, because it was one of those where it went to acquisitions at both Tor and St. Martin's. And so we were, you know, sitting there being like, oh man, auction, here it goes. And then both of them passed. So the book went from we're going to auction to this book is dead in like a weekend. And so we were
James.
Yeah. And it was just like, oh, okay. Never mind like my whole future. Yeah. And so, you know, we kept going for a while after that. But then, you know, like I said, I was sort of depressed. And then I wrote this young adult romance that just felt, it just felt so right, because there was so much of me in that book. Like I was saying, it was based in many ways off of my own past. And also the voice, you know, it was a first person contemporary thing. So I basically got to just give the character my own voice, and I got to be funny. You know, it's a rom-com in a way that everything I'd written before had been fairly serious, you know, epic fantasy-esque. And so to be able to, you know, make Pokemon jokes or whatever, you know, was really exciting and a relief. And so then when, you know, my agent Cameron said, you know, I don't know what to do with this, She gave me her blessing to go find somebody who would represent just the young adult side of my work. And I did eventually find somebody else. But then once I found my current agent, Josh, it was just like an immediate romance love story. It was just instantly the way that he communicates is so perfect for me. He's just always, you know, I email him and I get an email response back in like half an hour. And just for somebody like me, who's fairly anxious, that sort of thing is amazing. And also it doesn't hurt that he was able to sell my books for a lot more money than I expected, you know, like, and part of
that helps.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing cements a relationship like thousands of dollars. But he also, you know, it worked really well. And some of that money, I should specify, is I think there's just a lot more money in young adult than there is in adult science fiction and fantasy. Like, but it really was the sort of thing where I made straight off the bat, like 10 times as much for these books as I did from my tie-in novels. So that was very exciting. And then just like everything worked so well. And he also represents adult stuff that at some point I talked to my previous agent and just said, hey, look, like, I like you. This has been great, but it just makes sense for me to consolidate everything through my one agent who's handling all my other stuff. And she was very gracious and just said, like, yeah, cool, see you around. And so I guess the answer to the question of how do you know when it's time? I don't know, but I think most people wait too long. I think you just, if you're not feeling like you've got a solid partner, if you're scared to talk to your agent, if your agent gives you reason to be scared to talk to them, if they're just not doing the job, or if you don't feel like they're hustling on your behalf, like, this is a business partnership and you got to feel like somebody is in it with you. So yeah, but it's hard.
Yeah. I think that absolutely 100% what you had said, people stay too long. Like, that is the number one thing, is everyone stays way too long, sometimes years longer than they should. I don't know anyone who has ever said, gosh, I wish I hadn't fired my agent.
Right. Well, and agents are such, like, and this is not disparaging when I say agents are a mixed bag. There's no like standard course that everybody goes through. There's no, like, you know, if you get a doctor, you know, they went to med school. If you get an agent, who knows? Like, maybe they apprenticed, maybe they, you know, didn't. Maybe they just hung out their shingle. And so it's really kind of all in the proof is in the pudding, right? Like, what are they able to do for you? How do they treat you? And if you're not happy, there's more. I swear that if you got an agent once, you will get an agent again. And here's the dirty little secret, is if you can't get another agent, you might not be ready for an agent. Like, and that's super hard to accept because everybody feels like the agent is like your key to publishing, but like ultimately the book is the key to publishing. And even, you know, if you lose the agent because there's only one person who like believed in your book, then you're going to have a real time, hard time selling the book to an editor, you know?
Yeah. And again, a lot of that search is finding someone who loves the book. And it was, you know, it was really interesting talking to, you know, my current agent, and she said, you know, Cameron, for agents, it's hard to have these conversations too.
Yeah.
To remind yourself, like, you know, agents are people too. And like you had said about, you know, your first agent who probably put it off too long having the conversation with you as
right,
well.
Right.
Because they don't want to either. Right. I remember my agent, again, having to tell me basically that the first 90,000 words of my book was bad.
Yeah, like, right.
That conversation sucked for me too, Cameron. I'm like, I know it sucks, but like, I think it's understanding. Like there are people, and to your point that they are, but at the end of the day, yes, the people, but also business partners. You're running a business. Yeah.
And do they give you what you need? Right. Yeah. Like, some people really need an agent who will come in and say, like, here's what, you know, who are very editorial and will say, here's what your book needs. And then there are other people who just say, like, great, I'll send it out. And like, that's great. Like, if you're the sort of writer and they're the sort of agent where that works, like my current agent, I'm very happy with, you know, I don't think he's ever really given me editorial notes, but he's sold the hell out of my foreign rights. And like, that's ultimately, I'm happy with that division of labor of, you know, I'll figure out the book on my end, but I totally respect the people where they're really in partnership with their agent. Like, cause some people need that sounding board.
Yeah. And I think, again, that creative, you know, someone who's really creatively kind of in the weeds with you. And I remember actually having that conversation with someone I knew, again, a bestselling author, who she said, Cameron, your agent sounds great, but I just want an agent who I send them a book and they send me a check. And that is our right. entire relationship. I want nothing more to do with them. I don't want to talk to them. I don't want my hand held. I don't want any editorial guidance. I want to say, here's the book, go make me some money. And I'm like, right. okay, that didn't work for me, but I totally understand, you know, right. It really depends on what you're looking for, and to know that that changes, right.
Yeah,
which I think was, again, to your point, like what we need out of our creative work and our business relationships may change over time too.
Right. And it may change in a variety, right? Like the weirdness with me is that I, you know, started out with a young adult agent, like went to adult science fiction and then went back to a young adult agent because it turns out that that is where I was headed. And I just, but I took another 10 years for me to figure out how to do that thing and what I should be doing. And I've always really loved my blessing and my curse is that I've always really loved playing in every genre, you know, whether that's in writing or music or, you know, I like all the different media. I like, you know, even now, right? Like I'm writing queer young adult contemporary romance. And also like last year I sold some stories to like Nightmare that were like the most horror things I'd ever written, just because it was super fun. Like my favorite story I've ever written is, like a weird psychological thriller about a mother who time travels by eating her child's placenta. And like, I sold that to Nightmare last year.
I love it. Yeah.
And it's one of those like, okay, well, this is very different than like rom-com, but it's just fun. I like having that breadth of, and frankly, that palate cleanser when I finish one project to go to something wildly different.
Excellent. Well, cool. Those are my questions. Tim, did you have any questions for James here?
Well, I have our general question, our pop culture pop quiz.
Right.
Where I ask, what are you reading? What are you watching? What are you listening to? And in as long as we have been doing this, nobody has ever answered what they're listening to.
So oh, I'm really?
Okay. And James, because he's a musician, to actually tell us what he's listening to. Because I always ask it and nobody, I don't think anybody's ever said anything but me.
Okay, so, I'll give a couple of answers then. Okay. People I've been listening to recently, there is a sort of indie dance pop kind of band called Sub Radio that does like the best just sort of poppy, fun, queer dance music out there. And I actually had a lovely experience with them because I listen to them constantly. They're one of my favorite bands. And so I mentioned them in Dark Hearts, my novel, because it's a book about music. And so I have like one of the characters wearing their t-shirt. And the other day, a fan actually took the book to one of their shows and like met them and like showed them. And so I just woke up one morning and got this video from the whole band being like, hi, thanks for putting us in your book. We like you.
And
that was amazing.
That's awesome.
But other stuff I've been listening to, I'm a big heavy metal, like metalcore kind of guy. And okay. Sleep Token is mm-hmm. this band that's just been tearing up the metal scene the last year or two. And they're the weirdest thing because they are super heavy and also will incorporate like R&B and jazz and pop and just kind of put everything in there. And they'll do this amazing stuff. Well, also they're all masked. They don't have names. Like I think the lead singer is called Vessel and everyone else is just numbered. And they all are like prophets of the god of sleep. And all of their music goes into this whole thing. And it's cool. Like even the production design on their masks is awesome. So well worth checking out. I think they're some of the best metal kind of around right now. And then I'll throw one last one in, which is a band called Like Roses that I recently found that's a female-fronted sort of emo punk band that's still coming up, but really, really good. And that's what I've been listening to. Can I also plug one show that I've been enjoying?
Absolutely.
I watch almost no television, and so it's very weird for me to have joined a fandom, but there's a show called Jetlag that is on it's on like YouTube and Nebula, But it's basically like an Amazing Race type thing, but just by the same three friends who make the game for themselves and then just play it, where they like play tag like across Europe or whatever. And it's just nerdy and delightful, and it just feels like a couple of your dorky friends like chasing each other around a continent, doing weird, fun challenges. And it has none of the drama of, or like none of the artificial drama of reality TV. I feel like a lot of reality TV is so overproduced and they create drama between the things. And these ones, it's like everybody is very nice and likes each other legitimately. And you're just like, oh, I'm just watching best friends goof off together. Like, that's really fun. So Jetlag, I highly recommend it.
Are what you about a you guys? Fan of the band Ghost?
Oh, so I know about Ghost, but I've never really gotten into them. Okay. But there are definitely, I can see some similarities between them and Sleep Token. But in yes. my opinion, Sleep Token is so much better.
Okay. Cameron, what about you? What are you watching, listening to, reading?
I'm very boring. I'm watching Fallout.
Nice.
Oh, that's Fallout, not boring.
Which is adorable. It is really fun, and I like the silly retro future. I actually think that it's got some amazing writing, much better writing than I thought it was.
Nice.
There's a lot of things, a lot of callbacks to our current age, which I think they're doing in a really smart way. Also, believe it or not, I'm reading David Copperfield because I somehow ended up watching Dev Patel's version of David Copperfield, which he did, which was adorable. It's got like Tilda Swinton and Hugh Laurie and all these. It's from, when was it from? From like, I don't know, like 2018 or 2019. And it was just so adorable that I felt that I needed to read David Copperfield. So
nice.
That's what I'm reading. Yeah.
I've been meaning to read like Barbara Kingsolver did her version of David Copperfield, the Demon Copperhead that everybody says is great.
I tried to get into that. Yeah, I haven't got, I wasn't able to get into it very well, but yeah, I have heard of that.
I'm hot and cold on Barbara Kingsolver, but like when she's good, I love her because she creates this sense of place, like her world building. Like it's weird. I remember falling into her stuff and thinking like, oh, this gives me the same thing I like out of fantasy because it's building a sense of a place. Like, I mean, honestly, Appalachia is as foreign to me as Middle Earth in terms of my actual lived experience. So like being able to build that sense of what a place is like with all its different customs and things really delights me.
Well, and it's also, and we didn't get into world building, but next time you're on the show, we'll have to.
I'd love to.
But no, you know, I was actually thinking also when someone gets a place right, I was watching True Detective the latest season of True Detective. And it was awesome because the houses, like when you go into the houses, it felt like houses in Alaska. I was like, they're doing this correct. Like this actually feels like Alaska to me.
Nice. So
it's like when you have settings that people, again, in fiction, even if it's, again, you know, local to whatever, like you are from, it's really nice when they get it right. Cause you have that incredible sense of place, right? That makes you go, oh, look, you get it. And you have been there and you understand it. So there's that too, even when it's not a foreign place, a foreign country, it makes it feel like there's just some evocativeness to that.
And that's one of the things that was super important to me when writing Dark Hearts, because it's set, you know, in Seattle, like pretty much in my neighborhood, you know? And so it's one of those things where it's like every house that a character lives in is like, I can tell you the address of that house. I've been inside it, you know, that sort of thing. It's all, they're going to my favorite restaurants and stuff. And part of that was because during the pandemic, I wanted just a way to like experience my city while I was locked down, you know, just in my imagination. Yeah. But also I wanted it to have that feel of like, this is really authentic. And so it's been lovely. Like even my editor the first time was like, oh, this feels like a Pacific Northwest novel in a way that, you know, a lot of them don't necessarily. And so that was really fun getting to capture that sort of feel of not just the Seattle music scene, but just like, what is it like to be from here?
Yeah.
Have either of you watched the adaptation of Three Body Problem on Netflix?
Oh, actually, yes, I have. I actually really enjoyed it. You know what? I was surprised. I loved all those characters so much. And I kept watching because I love the characters. I was talking to some other writer friends. They're like, oh, it's so boring, except for the really cool horror episode. And I said, well, you got to get the character. You have to really connect with those characters. And I really did. And I felt it was a lot of fun for that reason nice. To me. And finally I understood what the three body problem was.
When yeah, exactly. Yes.
I'm like, three bodies problem. I don't get. And then I'm like, oh, right. It's like, it's an astronomy thing. Well, if I knew it was an astronomy thing, I would have read the book.
You're like, I thought this was porn. Like,
you know, like, how many, but what are we doing with these?
Three bodies. That can be a problem.
That can be like, a problem. You know, like... Which goes better, you know, I don't know. So yeah, no, it was. I did. I had that I immediately bounced off that title when it was very popular and just never got around to it. Now I'm like, oh, I might actually really like that book.
I'm very curious about the show because I read the book many years ago and sort of had trouble getting into it because I felt like I was really interested in the cultural revolution parts of it, but just I glaze over a little bit when there's a lot of heavy math or physics, which I think was part of the joy for a lot of people in those books. But also, there was something about the storytelling style. And I realize this is, you know, because I'm so steeped in a very Western, you know, three act structure, sort of conventional storytelling style. I think there were some different storytelling elements there that I was not as used to. And so I was sometimes like, wait, what, where'd those characters go? What's going on? Like, I'm confused.
And there have been a couple other adaptations. There was a Chinese series and a Chinese film as well. So now I kind of want to watch those to compare.
Right. Well, yeah.
You know, to see the differences for sure.
Benedict Wong is great. Oh, he needs to team up with him and Natasha Lyonne need to do a cop show together.
Yes. He was a great detective in it. He was lovely. He was
nice.
Yeah.
I do want to throw out a mention. I started watching a show on Apple TV. It's called The Reluctant Traveler. It's with Eugene Levy, who you know from Schitt's Creek and all those things. Yeah. And he travels around the world. And the premise is he doesn't like to travel. He actually just prefers to stay at home in Toronto. But Dan, his son, encouraged him to go see the world because he's almost 80. Like, he's in his mid-70s.
Is he really?
Right. Yeah. And he's like, you got to get out there and like see the world. And he's like, okay. So he's going out and he's doing all these things. And you can see him like, really struggling to do these things like, hey, we're going to go ice fishing in Sweden and we're going to do this in, you know, Greece. And he's like, oh God,
I just want to be home in my garden.
I just want to be home. The only thing he enjoys is the food. He's like, I'll eat, you know, I just want to eat and then do nothing. I just want to sit in my hotel room. And they keep like pulling him out of the hotel room to do things. But it's really fun. And I feel like I am like, part Eugene Levy watching that show.
Yeah, no, that sounds delightful.
Okay. Are we ready to wrap up now, Cameron? All right. You can find James at his website, jamesl.sutter.com. And then you are also on the X, formerly Twitter, at James L. Sutter.
Yeah.
And also on the Instagram, but there's little dashes in between.
James_L_Sutter. And honestly, Instagram is more where I am these days. It's such a shame. Can we talk just for a second about what a shame it is that Twitter has gone away? Like, it was so my favorite social media platform. And the only one that I was actually like a little bit good at. Like every so often I would get some sort of viral tweet from some joke. And it was like,
I know you're one of your big ones. The pollinator.
Oh, which one? The pollinators. Yeah. It's funny how often I've met people in the real world that are like, oh, you're for the pollinators guy. And I was like, I really did not expect that to be the thing. I've done some other things too. Perhaps you would like, but that's the thing, right? Like, I loved that element of Twitter because it was like stand up. It was just, you were throwing out whatever. And I'm a terrible photographer. So like Instagram was a really hard shift, but my publisher was like, if you're writing young adult, you must be on Instagram. That's where everybody is. And they were right. And everybody on Instagram is really lovely. I just have far fewer followers than I do after, you know, 12 years on Twitter or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've kind of gotten to the point where I am accepting of the fact that every 10 to 15 years, the social media is just going to eat itself and it's going to destroy itself in a big ball of flame. And whether it's MySpace, Facebook, I left in like 2012, I think, they're all eventually going to kind of eat themselves. So I try to tell myself, enjoy it while you can.
Yeah.
I'm on Blue Sky right now, and it's mostly writers. And so I'm like, this is great. And I'm just, again, I'm not really there for promo because like hardly anyone follows me, and I mostly just talk to writers. But I have those, I still get to have those cocktail conversations.
Yeah.
I talk to writers who I've never really talked to and find new, you know, so I just bought The Saint of Bright Doors, actually.
Nice.
I was talking to the, you know, the writer that I'm on. So it's like, I feel like I could make those kind of more personal connections, but it's not, you know, yeah, you lose. I mean, I totally lost. Twitter was where I generated all my Patreon followers, all
right.
Of my, you know, yeah, all of my book promo, all of that. It just kind of went away, right?
And I don't know how you find people anymore, because even Twitter has been so attenuated, not just from people leaving, but like, you know, I'll be damned if I'm going to pay money for it. And so I think everything's getting throttled. And so suddenly you go where it's just like posts get seen by 7 people, 3 people. And it's like, well, what am I even doing here?
Yeah.
But it's just that long, slow, to quote Cory Doctorow, like the inshittification, right? But yeah, I truly don't know what comes next for authors in terms of like, yeah, you can try to do book talk or BookTube or whatever. But if I were really good at being an influencer on camera, I'd have a different career and be making a lot more money. Right.
And it's like you said about Instagram, right? It's like, well, I'm not the best photographer. Well, and on with the video forms, you got to look good. You got to edit good. You got to talk good. You got to, you know, I mean, there's a lot of other things that, again, I put all of my money on being a writer. I can't do anything else. I can roll around with the tomatoes in my garden. That's about all I can do.
Right.
But yeah, it's like, you have to do all of those other things. I was like, I would rather spend my time being a writer, you know?
Yeah. And I don't even
struggle. Yeah.
I don't even know what to advise young writers anymore I'm backing away from my social media. You know, I still post on everything because I need to. And like, weirdly, Facebook is like having a little resurgence, but that's, I think, a last gasp right there. But yeah, I don't know what to tell people because I think that TikTok and BookTube are all such different media that we're quickly getting to a place where it's just like, that is not compatible with you. That's, if you have that career, great. But that's like saying, okay, go become a celebrity. Like, and then publish your book. I can't do that.
It's like, you know, Daniel Abraham told me one of the reasons The Expanse ended up being a show is somebody randomly was at a party in Hollywood and was talking about, oh, I would really be interested in doing a sci-fi, you know, epic, you know, whatever, space opera. And literally someone suggested the book at a party. I think there are just things we can't control. And I think, like, book talks, one of them, like, we don't know, like I said, all you can hope for is, you know, that somebody, like, you or someone puts the book into somebody's hand and that they like it and they enjoy it and they talk about it. There are lots of things, though, that I feel like I spent a lot of time trying to control. And it did help me, right? It helped me go from nobody to, like, it helped me go from low mid-list to mid-mid-list. But after that, I feel like there's something extra that has to happen. And whether that's, again, so it's usually someone else talking about, it's not you talking about your book. It's someone else. It's Bigalus Dickalus, right?
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Exactly. Max and Amal. Yeah. And Max.
So yeah. And so it's not necessarily something that I feel like we even have control over. It just gives us a sense of control. And I'm like, you know, if I'm not really enjoying social media, my life is only so long. Like, should I really be spending this time trying to make something happen that other people are the ones? I don't know.
Anything
else? Because I'm a marketer all day, right? So
Marketing
works. I know it works. At the same time, it's like, is that how I want to spend all my time? Is marketing and work? And you talk to a lot of indie published novelists who are burnt the fuck out because they were doing both for so long, and now they're competing against people generating shit with AI.
Right.
They're like, I'm tired and I'm done. And it's like, you can only do that for so long, and then you get burnt. And I'm just like, is my time better spent being a better writer? Because to your point, what gets you an agent is the book. Gets you a deal is the book. So it's like, at the end of the day, should we really be spending our time mostly on, you know, the work? And so, like, I have that same, like, feeling all the time. It's like, I don't want to be left behind, but I also am like, is this really a good place to put my time? I don't know.
Well, and it's such a weird thing because it's the rise of influencer culture, right? Like, we've ended up with this thing where, like, you look at games, for instance. Like, I always think it's fascinating when, you know, everybody knows the names, especially in tabletop role-playing games. Like, everybody knows the names of the people who stream their games, like, who play the games on YouTube, but they have no idea who made the games. And so you end up in these weird places where, you know, the booktubers who are, like, talking about their opinions of books are making much more and much more well-known than the actual authors of those books themselves. And I'm not saying it's wrong, but it is a weird era where the critics are ascendant, and not critics in the sense of being critical, but just like the tastemakers are sort of much better known. And I think it's a result of the internet democratized everything and allowed everybody to put their art out there. But now that we don't have top 40 anymore, everybody's like, well, where do I start?
Where do I go?
And so the influencers gain more and more power. And we've ended up in this weird era. You know, I feel like this comes up a lot with self-publishing of like, well, you know, editors are gatekeepers or whatever. And it's like, well, actually, I feel like influencers are the new gatekeepers, because they're the ones to determine when somebody's like, there are a million books on, I mean, I say a million, there's probably 100 million books on Amazon. Which one should I read? Well, I'll go read Fourth Wing because that's what everybody I follow on TikTok says, you know? And so,
is that so different than Roger Ebert or whatever?
It's not.
There's more of them, you know?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, it's so fascinating to me that we came full circle. And I think also,
well,
this
it's just like streaming is going to become the new cable, right? It's the same.
Yeah.
Now I have 75 different streaming services, just like I had 75 different cable channels,
and they play ads, even though you
pay
for them.
And it's just like, Jesus, we're just going right back to where we were.
Oh my god. And sorry, I totally derailed our whole sign off, but I feel like this is useful industry knowledge.
It's all useful
to any writers listening. We are also trying to figure it out.
Yeah, we don't know shit either, so you're doing fine.
This sounds like all the conversations I have about the music industry with my friends. Same thing.
Yeah, same issues.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that the people at the top in the music industry are benefiting from it, in that, like, you know, I mean, Beyonce is going to be big anyway, but like, when people go, oh my god, where do I start? There's infinite artists on Spotify. I'll listen to Beyonce because I know it's going to be good. I'll listen to Taylor Swift or whatever. Like, I think that it really, in some ways, helps the people who are already at the top, because there aren't record labels that are as invested in trying to get the smaller bands to be bigger these days. It's kind of just, you throw it out there and see what hits.
Yep. Spaghetti.
Yep.
We're all spaghetti, James.
We're all spaghetti. Oh my God. We're spaghetti. You just got to hang in there and keep making more books, more spaghetti, more scratch-off tickets.
For the wall. Like, yeah.
The biggest thing that I've embraced in the last few years is the idea that, like, every book is a lottery ticket. Mm-hmm. There's only so much that you as an author can do to try and make a book hit. And, like, ultimately, you might move hundreds of copies. You might even move 1,000 copies, but you're not going to move 20,000 copies on your own. Yeah. So, like, if it doesn't happen, it just doesn't happen. And all you can do is write the next book. And eventually, hopefully, one of them takes off and raises all the backlist.
Yeah. Enjoy the process. Enjoy what you're doing.
Seriously.
And again, as your career has taught us, and pivot when you're, you know, when your heart's in, find what your heart's in. Because ultimately, that's what we're doing, right? Is we are spending our time on the work, and that's what we can control. Nothing else.
Well, and every time I've done that, every time I've pivoted to something that did not seem related to the thing I was doing before, honestly, my career took a jump. Like, I didn't write my first, you know, fantasy novel until my metal band broke up. And then that fantasy novel did much better than that band ever did. And then, like, when I jumped to doing young adult romance, like, those books are doing, you know, much better in, you know, by various metrics than, like, some of the fantasy stuff I'd written before. I mean, a different industry, and obviously the games were very successful. But I think that you can find success anywhere as long as you are really passionate about it. And frankly, as long as you're aware of the fact that you might have to start at the bottom again. I definitely had to start at the bottom again.
Okay. I'm going to wrap us up officially now.
You're going to try. We'll see.
I'm going to try. You guys are going to derail me again. That's fine. You can find Cameron at CameronHurley.com. She's active on Blue Sky and Instagram under the same name. You can sign up for short, gooey adventures from her every month at Patreon. Finally, Cameron, send us on home.
Wait. Can I pitch one thing?
James needs a pitch. Yes.
I'm going to be a jerk. Just wanted to one more time say, so if you like queer young adult romance, Dark Hearts is the music one, Two Boys. The Ghost of Us comes out in June, is a sapphic romance featuring a ghost hunter and an actual ghost. If you want to read that placenta story I talked about, that's on Nightmare. Placenta. It's called To Cheer As They Leave You Behind.
I feel like that will go over well with the Hurley audience.
Yeah,
that's why I wanted to get it in there. Appropriately gooey.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you again, James, for joining us this month. And as for the rest of you, get back to work.